It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Are you a little bit surprised about the timing, or would you rather Liverpool just kept it under wraps, or do you think they couldn't have?
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fan View. My name's James, and I was looking for something to do with one of our correspondents, potentially, for a podcast today on Tuesday, and I was stuck for ideas. And then Friday morning, a bit of a bombshell happened, and I went, Dan, we need to talk. Let me introduce you to our Liverpool correspondent, Dan Lord, who's going to be discussing Friday's shock announcement that Jurgen Klopp will be leaving Liverpool at the end of the season. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, I'm all right now. Now the shock's passed, I'm good.
Was it like completely, because it felt for us neutrals, it was just a complete jolt out of the blue. No one saw it coming. There was no murmur or anything. He'd re-signed in 2022 to extend to 2026. Did anybody up in the north have any idea this was coming?
No, none of the people in the know had any idea as well. When you listen to stories now, you know, all the reporters who were close to the club, nobody had a clue. They had a slight inkling that something was going on because they changed the time of the press conference and brought it to the afternoon. So they were thinking one of two things. It's a transfer or it's a new contract, because there's a few kind of contract negotiations going on in the background at the moment. So, yeah, it took everyone by surprise. I mean, particularly me. So I was at work Friday morning and my brother-in-law called, and he's a City-stroke Blackburn fan. And it came up on my phone. I was like, oh, what's this prick want now? So I answered the phone and he's like, hi, yeah, this is Paul from Samaritans. I just wanted to know if you wanted to chat after today's announcement. I was like, what are you talking about, you idiot? And he's like, Klopp's going at the end of the season. And I just went, sure, I'm going. Put the phone down and just went on the phone and said, oh, he's having a laugh here. And then just went on Sky Sports because I thought if it's on Sky Sports straight in my face, it's there. And he was there and I was like, oh, my God. So, yeah, I didn't expect it at all. You know, he'd only signed another extension to his contract kind of, you know, last year to 26. And I thought he'd probably go after 26. I mean, last year was a tough year. You could see the strain it put on him. And then he kind of came back a bit revitalized, didn't he, after the summer. You know, we got rid of some of the older group and he's 2.0, as he likes to call it. And you thought, you know, he's got his mojo back. But, yeah, obviously not.
What was your reaction when you hear that news? What are you doing in your mind at first? Because you'll see the headline, he's leaving. Are you asking, like, why? I suppose that's probably the first question. Why? What's happened?
Well, it was, but also almost immediately, that's when simultaneously they kind of released the Liverpool TV, you know, LFC TV kind of, you know, interview as such, or where Klopp's just speaking. And it's like, kind of sympathised with him a little bit, and I kind of quite felt sorry for him, because you know, he's blood and guts. He's such an emotional man. He's, and I'm not saying different managers, other managers aren't the same, but he's probably a 15, 16, 17 hour a day man working, you know what I mean?
And we outwardly see his energy, I think is part of your point. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and that's the thing with Klopp. Just as a person, I don't care about the manager part of it, because if I'm perfectly honest, there's loads of better tacticians out there. It's just his man management. It's the connection he had with the club, the players from day one, and he's just been just that kind of that idol, that figure that. You know, I never used to watch press conferences of Liverpool managers. Now I don't miss one. I just want to hear what he. I'm intrigued all the time to what he, you know, has to say. And I know he's, you know, one of the reasons it didn't surprise me that much. His demeanour has changed in these press conferences. You can see he kind of he doesn't like doing them anymore. He's sick of the questions. He's sick of the journalist playing on his words. And yeah, you can see he's kind of beaten and going down. And so when he said he just doesn't have the energy anymore, it was like, well, yeah, it kind of shows.
So we think that he informed the owners, FSG, in November.
That's the one I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, and then I guess it was kind of a period of, well, let's make sure it's right. Your rival's down in Manchester. His manager changed his mind and stayed, nearly another 10 years or so, didn't he? I think from his original intention, stepped down. And I think it's quite right, Liverpool games that space. But also, it sounds like there was no attempt to persuade him, but they knew that they weren't going to get him to change his mind. He'd made his mind up that he was definitively going to go. I presume you obviously watched the video that Liverpool released.
Yeah.
Did that change your reaction from your instant kind of shock to how you felt about it afterwards? Did you, by that point, sort of within a half hour, go, I accept this?
Yeah, I accepted it almost straight away. As soon as I saw his interview, I was like, well, you know, I can understand it. You know, you can't do this forever. And, you know, nothing's forever, is it? And, you know, I expected another year or two, but, you know, he can go with his head held high and nobody will begrudge him for going on his terms. And when he does, and he almost alluded to that by kind of saying, if I don't walk, they're never going to sack me, you know, in roundabout terms, he said that, you know, because he even said like last year, any other manager in Liverpool would have probably been sacked, you know, the finish we had and the performances, and it was just never going to happen. You know, the connection was that tight that, you know, he kind of had to make the decision because it had never been made for him. And like you said, he probably did say October, November, and maybe they said, right, let's sit on it until after Christmas in the new year. If you still feel the same, then that gives us time enough to get it out there and start looking, because, you know, there's rumours that, you know, they've already had feelers out, but I find that impossible to believe, you know, but the word had got out already. If feelers are going around and they're talking to other managers, agents and stuff like that, it had got out. So I do think that they're not even starting looking until now. They've probably done all the due diligence in the background and checked out where they want to go and who they want to look at. But actually approaching people, I think that's probably going to start soonish.
Yeah, I'd not considered that. That's a great point. Because I'd said on Friday, and I did a stream pretty much straight afterwards, and I said it wouldn't have surprised me that if the announcement came now because Liverpool knew who they were getting, maybe even perhaps it was already done and they went, right, you're free to do your business. Now people know we're not looking. You're absolutely right. There's no way that no agent wouldn't have leaked to someone, Liverpool inquiring about managers here, something's not right. You're absolutely right. So probably Liverpool probably haven't approached anyone yet then.
No, I don't think they have. And, you know, I think it's, I think they've been considering what the direction is. And I think they've probably decided that, you know, are they going to get a all singing, all dancing coach, a bit like Klopp, who kind of runs the show pretty much, or are they going to go back to the director of football and get kind of a younger, inexperienced coaching to just concentrate on the coaching side of things, and the director of football will kind of do the rest. So it'll be interesting to see which way they go. I'd like them to do the latter, if I'm honest, because you've got more options then, I think. And I don't know. He's proved that the kind of tactical and analytic side of things can be successful, you know, with the recruitment that they've got or had to get them where they were, proves that that works. Because let's face it, a lot of the personnel who were kind of first teamers or in, you know, when they, you know, did won the league, etc. You know, think of Mane, you know, he was decent at Southampton, you know, in his first season. Nobody ever thought of him as being this superstar. And Robertson, you know, he was bloody relegated at Hull, for God's sake. And then, you know, now he's considered one of the best fullbacks or left backs in the league, or was at least. I think Van Dijk was the only real massive name that everybody really wanted. And, you know, he spoke to Chelsea and he spoke to City at the time and chose Klopp. And that's down to Klopp, I think. And that's the thing we really miss is kind of his drawing power. You know, Liverpool has its own drawing power as a club. But to draw players, I think Klopp is monumental in all these kind of transfers we've brought in, and a massive emphasis on characters and personalities as well. And he really wants to get to know that player, that he'll fit in with the club. So that'll be a massive miss.
Have you reflected on the announcement in the sense of, would you rather have not known? What one of the big questions I had, again, it was quite instant reaction to what happened. But one of the questions was, how do you think it'll impact them for the rest of the season? And I said, it's very dependent on the results, right? If you beat Chelsea and you beat Arsenal, everyone goes, great time. And if you lose the two games and people go, that announcement's derailed their title bid or something like that. So it will be defined by results, I guess. But the timing did seem, as you're coming into, we just had a period of quiet, I think, even though you had cup semi-finals, and now there's these two really big league games coming up. Are you a little bit surprised about the timing, or would you rather Liverpool just kept it under wraps, or do you think they couldn't have?
I don't really know. I mean, like you said, it could go one of two ways. Obviously, the kind of the emotion now at every single game, even Norwich, the atmosphere was electric, and I'm guessing it's probably going to be for the rest of the season now, and actually, you know, just appreciate Klopp while he's there right through. Whether they control that emotion in the right way is remains to be seen, I suppose. You know, you can get over emotional, can't you, and lose your head. So it's having that balance between the two. I think doing it early is probably the best thing. In regards to if they are going to start putting feelers round, it's come out from Klopp's mouth, and it's not like, oh, he's out the door, someone's pushing him out. You know, there's talks of this, that, and the other. That way, it might be down to contract negotiations with some of the bigger stars and actually saying, you know, before you sign this contract, know that I'm not going to be here. I think there's something today there about Van Dijk this afternoon that kind of got reported that that he's not sure where his future lies. And obviously the media speculate as in, oh, he's off. And I think that's the way I read that was like, well, it depends who comes in. Do they want me around? Not will I stay? Yeah. Do they want me around? You know, I think he's almost 33 now, or he is 33, you know, and he's, you know, he'll probably happily sign a new contract if whoever comes in wants him around. And he probably knows that if Klopp was staying, that he would want him around. And, you know, Trent's in the middle of things. Madrid are sniffing, and you know the Salah situation as well.
Mo was the one people were saying straight away. A few people said, "Oh, that's Salah gone to Saudi Arabia." And I said, hey, you can say that because he might be reinvigorated himself by a new manager challenge, right?
Yeah, it could be. And I was under the impression he probably would go to Saudi sooner rather than later. But I think with the way it's going, and actually the people who've gone to Saudi want to come back because it's that bad. I think. He's still in his prime, you know. He can play in any top league around the world. Still, can Salah. He's that much of an athlete. So he may move on, but it may be to a Madrid or a Paris or somewhere like that. And my chances are somewhere else. I don't think it'll be Saudi.
Does it make the rest of the season more important? I suppose that's pulling at the heartstrings a little bit. It's not like you don't want to win trophies anyway. Of course you do. But do you think there's a psychological edge to that this has just become way more important now for Liverpool?
I think there could be if we like you say if we beat Chelsea and then go on and get at least a draw against Arsenal, then you know, if we've got a bit of a gap or you know, like it sits now, from March, April, I kind of fancy us to ride on the back of that wave, really, and, you know, all for Klopp and this, that and the other. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, we won the quadruple. You know, we've been there, seen it, done it. I'd say been there, seen it, done it. We've been in this situation before.
Obviously, no one's done that, mate.
But we've got a better squad than we had then. You know, some of the young players who've stepped up this season have been outstanding. And, I want to dream a little bit now, I think.
Every football fan should be allowed to do so. Have you dared to dream about the after and what you'd like?
I think, like I said before, I think I'd like to take... I think we're looking at big characters to want to come in and take over, who would run the place like a Klopp. Then it's probably looking at somebody like Simeone, which I think he's a great manager, but he's not a Liverpool manager. Ancelotti, I think, recently just signed a new contract. He would be one who could just come in and take this group of players and you know, go on. But I'd rather look at, you know, there's loads of talk about Xabi Alonso, obviously, and that was always going to come just because of his links to Liverpool and his good run or his good season so far with Leverkusen. I'd take a Xabi Alonso with a good kind of director of football. There's talk of Michael Edwards coming back. You know, they're all rumours at the moment. There's so much going around. I'd take De Zerbi. I think he's a great coach, and, you know, we'd have a director of football above him. I'd take... There's the young guy at Sporting who's doing well.
I was going to say the young guy at Spurs is going to slap you then, mate.
Well, I mean, there's talk about Ange, isn't there? Because of Ange's... You know,
yes, he was a Liverpool fan as a
youngster. Know, yeah. But somebody like Ange would take as well. But he wouldn't leave Tottenham after year one, that's for sure, regardless of whatever he thought about Liverpool. But that kind of manager, someone who's got something to prove other than somebody who's won it all. And I don't know. I think I'd go that way. And I think the squad that's left behind, this version 2.0 or whatever Klopp said it, I can't remember how he says it. 2.0 or something like that. I can't remember. But it's good to go, isn't it? You know, it's there, it's ready. You know,
do you think that's why as well, in the sense, just to kind of jump back a bit, do you think if you'd have been shit this year, and with respect for Liverpool standards you were last year, do you think if you were like fifth now, this would be the case? Or do you think, no, I've got to carry on? It does sound like, reading between the lines, that this 2.0 has kind of got back towards the top of the league, perhaps quicker than he expected. And I think he himself, I suppose, he said to the players, I feel more comfortable going now because you've done better than I expected and I can pass this over in good faith, basically.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, there's a lot of rumours going around that he wanted to walk last summer and his missus persuaded him to do one more year. So there's rumours going around everywhere of this, that and the other. I think... This 2.0 is has shocked everyone, you know, me included, and all the fans. We didn't expect to kind of, you know, be so good so early that, you know, it's clicked a lot quicker than we thought it would. And it just seems to be getting better, if I'm honest. And we're getting players back fit now as well to add to that. I think his mind was already made up, and I think he just didn't want to leave it with a deteriorating squad. You know, we've seen that in recent years. I think Fergie left a pile of shit, although he kind of won the league somehow with that team the year before he left. I think Wenger did a little bit the same. I think he didn't leave the best kind of squad behind. I think in this case, I think Klopp's left a really good squad for whoever wants to come in. And can come in and kind of not really need to recruit, because whoever it's going to be, he's not going to have a war chest. They're going to have to do it the FSG way, and it's going to have to be, you know, tight strings, and, you know, go off recruitment, off analytics, and trust the guys in the background. I think the data cruncher, Will Spearman, he's called, isn't he? The kind of guy behind the scenes, the Harvard PhD guy. He'll be doing a lot of that in the background for players, but also the manager, I think, who's best suited to look after this group of players. And I think that's why I mentioned Amorim, because I think style of football is a little bit closer to Klopp's than Xavi's is. Xavi's is a little bit more possession-based, which Liverpool are a little bit better at that at the moment. But I think Amorim has that little bit more of kind of high intensity, which we've brought back this year.
I think it's interesting thinking about what's next, because I think Alonso feels like the obvious and probably what most fans, I would guess, would say was obviously an incredible player for you. He's obviously started his managerial career unbelievably well up by Leverkusen, top of the Bundesliga at the moment. You could play them in the Europa League, by the way, which probably feels
probably
written.
The final.
I liked Klopp's comments the other day, didn't he? But I saw this brilliant video that he did with a young lad from Ireland who didn't have arms or legs and had come over to Anfield for a game. And they were talking about the prospect of Europa League final being in Dublin. He went, yeah, well, it's another home game, isn't it? And it was a kind of typical cheeky Klopp comment. I wonder, though, because there's been so much emotion and connection with Klopp, whereas perhaps some of the previous ones, such as perhaps Brendan Rodgers and Roy Hodgson, they didn't feel like that perhaps connection in quite the same way, despite Brendan Rodgers very nearly won you a league title as well, or Luis Suarez and his mates nearly won you a league title.
Mm.
But I wonder if like having that emotional connection again with someone like Alonso is better for this club, because you do seem to work well with a lot of emotions sometimes. Or if you are better off having completely removed, someone new comes in, it's not trying to carry like a Liverpool flag, it's someone coming in and running their own ship. It'd be interesting to see what the club decides to do. I think for most of us neutrals, it probably feels like going for Alonso would feel inevitable, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what, like you said, most Liverpool fans would want. That's what I would want. I'm just not sure it would happen. I'm not sure. I mean, Alonso is... He's going to be a fantastic manager, isn't he? I mean, he's got the pedigree. His dad was a player and he grew up watching his dad a player. And then his dad was a manager. So, you know, grew up watching him be a manager. He's, you know, he's been a player under Benitez, under Guardiola, under Ancelotti, Del Bosque. The list is endless. And he was always an intelligent footballer himself anyway. You know what I mean? You could see that the way he played. So, you know, whether it's the right time for him now, does he want to find his feet and you know, do a few years somewhere else? I suppose that's up to Liverpool and him if they do approach him. It does seem like the sensible fit, but I don't think it's a given.
Steven Gerrard's been waiting for this moment for a few years, hasn't he?
Yeah, and maybe there was a time that was right and he... Again, it may become a good manager, but I don't think, you know, if we compare him to Alonso, regardless of what they've done as a manager, as players, again, you'd say Alonso was the more intelligent footballer, whereas Gerrard was heart in his sleeve, kind of passion kind of player, wasn't he? That'd be the best move, I think, Alonso. But whether that happens remains to be seen.
Where does Klopp rank for you in terms of all-time Liverpool greats, going back to Shankly and Paisley and Kenny Dalglish's first spell? Is he worthy of being in a conversation of that, or is that obvious?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I don't remember Shankly, obviously. I'm old, but I'm not that old. I know all the stories and stuff. Again, Paisley's when I first started getting into, you know, Liverpool at a young age, and don't really remember him. Well, I was born in 76, so he was, you know, I was like 7, 8, you know, in the early 80s. Dalglish was the first one who had a lasting impression, really. That's when I was like football crazy, and he was the player manager, and, you know, him and Rush and that Beardsley, Barnes, Ray Alton, Whelan, you know, that team, the Lawrence and Hanson, that Mulby, I used to love Ryan Mulby, Steve McMahon, all that era, that was all around Dalglish. And, yeah, he's definitely up there. And, you know, what he had to go through as manager through the Hillsborough thing and stuff like that. I'd say Dalglish still pips him, but he's definitely number two, I would say, in my lifetime of what I remember. And then probably Benitez and the rest, I wouldn't even really. Yeah, I mean, Roy Evans, he was, you know, always in the back anyway.
Benitez and Julio won trophies, didn't they? I mean, Julio, yeah, the cup treble in 2001. But it's not considered that, is it?
No.
In a way, Klopp feels like an auto to be in that conversation, despite only winning one league title. And do you think that's something that would ever count against him in that conversation? I mean, it's worth saying the others didn't have to compete against Pep Guardiola's Manchester City.
Yeah.
But would that count against him?
It may do from other fan bases. You know, I'm friends with fans from a lot of places, particularly United fans. And, you know, all the messages on WhatsApp groups and stuff like that are kind of, you know, Fergie won this, Fergie won that, and this, that, and the other. And Klopp's only won this. It's not, for me, it's not Klopp as the manager. It's Klopp as the person that I hold in legendary status. You know, he's so, I don't know, influential. He's got his self-awareness, he's intelligent, he gives an answer about everything, he's got an opinion on everything, and it's an educated opinion, and, you know, it winds other clubs' fans up, but actually, I think, calling out, I don't know, just refereeing, for example, you know, he's the only one, whereas others are thinking it, but nobody has the bollocks to talk about it, or even, you know, the amount of matches that these guys are playing in international matches, coming back and this, that, and the other. And people say, oh, he's just whinging, it's this, that, and the other. But actually, it's all for the welfare of the players. It's not for Liverpool Football Club. It's that the bigger picture. And I just think him as the man rather than the manager is what I love about him more than anything.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's, come on, be honest. It's all them 12:30 kickoffs, mate. It's enough now, isn't it?
Yeah, that part of it. And I think even press conferences, he hates press conferences. He just has this sarcastic tone with all the reporters because he knows whatever he says is going to be just made into something else. And he's just sick of it now. He's just like, I think one of the recent ones, he said he does about 6 a day. And he's just like, he can't wait to not do a press conference. But, you know, his main reason, what he said, is he just wants to live life a little bit. He's been doing this for 24 years. And, you know, they even asked him, what do you want to do that's normal? And he said, I don't know what normal is. I'll figure that out. You know what I mean? But he's looking forward to it. And I think that's why he said, you know, no club, no country for 12 months and no English club ever again. But I think he's saying that because of the 12-month thing that he talks about in Liverpool that everybody has to commit 12 months, regardless of how long your contract is. He spoke about that in interviews as well and said, you know, regardless if you've got a 6-year contract, it's always reviewed after 12 months. If you've had a brilliant season, you might want more money, then we talk about it. If you've had a crap season, we want to sell you, we'll talk about it. So I think he's given himself them 12 months to kind of say, do I like being away from football? Do I miss it? Is it, you know...
Is this
normal life what it always cracked up to be? And I think he just wants to try that, and fair play to him.
When I say he's back, it might be that he manages Germany or something like that, but I don't see this being the end of his managerial career. No way.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends, doesn't it? You know, he's like I said before, he's such an emotional character that it must drain you, you know, and maybe he needs to refuel and refresh and come back reinvigorated after 12 months. Or maybe he just says, well, I've done it for 24 years. I don't need to work again, does he? And maybe I'll just do punditry and just, you know. But we don't know. You can't imagine that's the kind of person he would be. He's probably going to do 6 months, absolutely hate it and want to come back. But you just never know.
So it's February 2025 and Liverpool have just lost 3-0 away in their Champions League first leg. Last 16 match, you're sitting 8th in the league. The new manager's not doing very well. Does the phone get picked back up then?
I don't think they'll pick the phone back up. But if he picked the phone up, they'd bite his arm off. I think. I think they know exactly where they stand. You know, he's that kind of strong personality that he said, I want this time off and, you know, don't contact me. If I am interested again, I'll contact you kind of thing. And yeah, it all depends on how long FSG stay there as well. Because he's got a good relationship with them, regardless to what everybody thinks about what they do and don't spend. He bought into that in the end, you know, and he knew what he had to play with. And yes, sometimes it was frustrating for him, I'm sure. But at the same time, he likes the sustainability model that Liverpool have, that, you know, they've built a new training complex, which cost 50 million plus quid, you know, two new stands, and Anfield's growing, and, you know, the club's grown. And at the same time, I had a look. Yeah, he's spent, his net spend is 400 million in 8 years.
Is that his whole period? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nothing,
which is brilliant to compete at that level. You know, that size of the club is phenomenal.
That's a Chelsea January transfer. Well,
yeah, exactly. That's what Chelsea did in the summer, isn't it?
I had the privilege of being at Klopp's first game. I say privileged because it was hard work. Rocked up at White Hart Lane, drew 0-0, and this very aggressive pressing system where right from the bat, you could tell that this was going to be a very different Liverpool. We heard words get mentioned the first couple of years like rock and roll football, heavy metal football. Yeah, you could see that right from the off. Do you remember what that team looked like at Tottenham? I've got it sitting in front of me. It's barely believable.
I do, because I looked at it myself. I was trying to think who would get in that team now.
None of them, mate. Maybe Coutinho.
Maybe Lucas was the only one I was thinking as a CDM.
Well, every Chan was a good footballer.
I'd take Lucas over Chan. I think Coutinho was in there, wasn't it? Moreno, Sacco, Skirtle, Klein, Milner, Coutinho, Lallana, Origi.
Yeah, and the bench isn't anything to write home about either.
No.
I think you did have a couple of injuries at the time, such as sort of Daniel Sturridge and stuff.
Yeah,
there. But yeah, I think it shows how far the progression was. And
that's
think,
not all down to Klopp, let's face it. You know,
recruitment
was brilliant, weren't it? And, you know, that's not down to Klopp. He's not saying, I want this player, I want that player.
With a net spend on kind of average of 50 million a year over that 8 year period, it had to be. And it did have the sales of the likes of Coutinho in there that we know had a big impact in sort of Van Dijk and Alisson, which I know a lot of people think was kind of the final push in the puzzle towards you winning the title. Mm-hmm. A few months after that 0-0 draw at White Hart Lane, and I don't know how it finished 0-0, by the way, because you should have been winning by halftime. I went to Dortmund in the UEFA Cup to play Thomas Tuchel's Borussia Dortmund. And we got absolutely walloped. 3-0, should have been 6 or 7. They bet knocked us out comfortably. Then in the next round, in the quarterfinal, they played you. And I was quite comfortable telling anybody that would listen what Dortmund were going to do to you, because my Tottenham were better than you, actually, at that time. We finished third, you might remember, in a two-horse race that season. While Klopp tried to acclimatise.
We finished eighth, I think.
And you drew 1-1 in Dortmund, and I was like, yeah, they'll still get them at Anfield. Sure enough, 4-3. They were 3-1 up at Anfield, taking the piss out of you. And then Liverpool did this weird thing that they do so often. And you won 4-3 on the night and went through. I remember away goals was obviously still a thing at that time as well. So you had to win.
I remember Lovren's header more than anything, back post header.
I presume there's an obvious answer to this, but I'd mention that because I think it's a bit of a forgotten one. But I guess that was probably Klopp's first great Anfield night, perhaps.
I think it probably was, because that was really early on.
Yeah, that's within his first 6 months.
Some of the bigger wins came, you know, in the 18, 19, 19, 20, but that one in the 15-16 season, the 4-3, that was it.
What's the most memorable? Is it Barca? It's got to be, isn't it?
It's got to be Barca. It's got to be the 4-0 Barcelona, yeah, after the first leg and thinking, you know... Liverpool fans are so optimistic when it comes to Champions League and Anfield. They're always so optimistic. So, you know, everyone was thinking, oh, we could turn it round. It's like, yeah, but it's Messi, Barcelona. It's not going to happen. But actually, after like 2-0, it just had that feeling that they're going to do it. And it was unreal. Unbelievable. Goosebumps just thinking about it now.
What other stick out Do any other games that particularly stick out in the memory? I guess the Manchester United.
Yeah, the 7-0 United, the 5-0 United, which the 4-0 United. They all stick out. 4-3 City. Yeah. That was a good one.
That was City's first defeat when they got 100 points, I want to say, maybe.
Yeah, it was the 18th.
And you also had, perhaps a forgotten one as well, the quarterfinal against City in the first leg.
Yeah, I went
in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, I went to that. I went to both legs and I got tickets for the away one. I sat in the away end. That wasn't nice. 5-1 against Arsenal. I enjoyed that one. Firmino's hat trick, because I used to love Bobby as well.
Possibly my favourite, actually, and they've mentioned it.
2-0 against Spurs, but for obvious reasons, it wasn't a great game. But obviously, we won the Champions League, so that was good.
Yeah, I said to you off camera before we started. Both teams had such monumental results in the semi final, then had to wait 3 weeks from the end of the Premier League season, and I was out there. It was mad hot, and obviously, you scored so early, and it impacted the game massively. Where, yeah, maybe if we'd have scored first, we'd have played like you did that night. You didn't have to play that well. On that particular night, are there any that you look back on, you think, what if only? I suppose
there's the Madrid where Salah had to go off with Ramos being a prick. That hurt, and especially I was in a cricket club watching that, and full of United pricks, and that wound me up no end because they were all laughing that Salah went off and stuff.
You know that's coming, Dan.
Yeah, I know. You set yourself up for it, don't you? But there's the goal line clearance.
The John Stones.
That changes.
I mean,
everything.
You talk about moments in football and fine lines. There's that. The John Stones, was it kicking it against Edison's back, and then God knows how he recovered.
Yeah,
and then even think back to the Barcelona game and Dembele's chance. At 3-0 for Barcelona.
Oh, yeah.
Surely at 4-0, we don't recover, do you?
Maybe. Well, no.
And the other thing about that Barcelona night, the second leg, is have people forget like how many injuries you had that night.
Yeah.
Salah didn't play, did he? Mane didn't play either.
No. That's why Origi was on, wasn't he? And Wijnaldum stepped up, didn't he? And he had an habit of doing that in big games. He scored some big goals, did Wijnaldum. And that's another example of the recruitment we referred to earlier. You know, Wijnaldum, Newcastle, he was all right, wasn't he? He wasn't, but he fit the bill. There's just a few like that, isn't there, where you just think, oh, if that, it could have been so different.
We've all got them stories, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. Every single fan base, regardless of whether it means a Champions League, a league title or whatever, just sometimes it's against a rival, isn't it? You know, the Everton game sticks out, actually, for where he hit the bar and Pickford kind of...
Oh, what, the Origi goal?
Yeah, the Origi goal in the second minute of injury time.
And that was the famous celebration from Klopp, wasn't it? When
yes.
He went nuts and ran on the pitch.
Yeah, ran on the pitch and hugged Alisson, yeah. Or there was the even funnier one of the celebrations was the 5-4 against Norwich, where he broke his glasses.
Broke his glasses, yeah.
Everyone jumped on him, so he's there.
That sums up a lot of early Liverpool, that game. Remembering back, I always remember going to a game in the 16-17 season, which would have been his first full season. Yeah. And Chelsea had this brilliant run where they'd won 13-14 games in a row, and then they lost to us. And it felt like there were numbers, my club, Arsenal, Liverpool, kind of all on the coattails. And I remember going to go, I think it was playing Middlesbrough in the 5-30, and you lost at Hull. And it just felt so typical of Liverpool at that time that you couldn't find a consistency. Because I think your record in the big games at the time, in his first couple of years particularly, was like astonishing. But yeah, then you'd have these mad ones, like you'd lose the whole. I remember you losing at home to Swansea one lunchtime as well.
Yeah, I remember that.
Some really silly results, but eventually you found the consistency once. I think, Alisson and Van Dijk were the game changers. Who would be a standout player of these 8-9 years, if you had to name one?
I think you'd probably just name the two there, but you could, Salah, Firmino, Mane, even Wijnaldum, Trent, obviously. It's that's the core, isn't it?
You throw Henderson into that category.
Yeah, to a certain extent, he's not well, he's like a 50-50. He's like a bit of a Marmite. I'm on the side. I liked Henderson, but I know big Liverpool fans who couldn't wait to get him out of the door, really, and thought he offered nothing. So, I mean, it was that front three, wasn't it? When they clicked, they were unreal, you know, and they stayed fit for so long, didn't they? You know, no injuries. Obviously, Van Dijk was massive, and Alisson. I'd say Alisson has just got better over the years, because he's always been a good, solid keeper, but we've got leakier as time has gone by, and he's had to prove his worth even more. Not to mention like popping up for corners against West Brom and popping one.
Oh God, that's another one, isn't it? But you forget the behind closed doors one, weren't you? You won 7-0 at Palace. And I went on the podcast on the Monday and I was like, that is it. Ain't no one stopping them. And 2 months later, you were like sixth. Just fell apart, didn't it? What? Why do you think that happened? And it was the injuries.
Season, yeah. I think I said at the time, a lot of it was fatigue from the season before. Because of this high-intensity football that he brought, it was kind of pretty much new to the league at the time, wasn't it? That kind of pressing didn't really exist. And because the players stayed fit for so long, they were doing it for 60 game seasons, like back to back. And I think he just caught up on them in the end, and they needed to stop doing it, which he did. And now he kind of changed to, like, there were certain triggers where the press would come in, depending on where the opposition had the ball and who was in certain positions. And then that kind of, you know, that last season didn't really work. And this season, it's kind of a bit more intense again, and we've had joy because of it.
Yeah, his teams are at his best when they're intense, mate.
Yeah, of course,
high energy.
Yeah, and then it's just Klopp. He'll just miss Klopp as a person. You know, the amount of, I don't know, like just press conferences where just some of the moments he's had in press conferences, which some people will be like, oh, he's a complete arsehole, and stuff like that. But you know, the little ones, the translator in the Champions League, and then the guy speaking French, and he's got the translator in his ear, and he's got like this really sexy voice, and then Klopp's like, wow, that's erotic. Again, please, stuff like that. And
I've never seen that one.
Have you seen the brain fog one?
Brain fog, no.
No. So Klopp was calling it brain fuck. And he's like, why, when everybody else says it, it's, you know, it's okay. But whenever I say it, he didn't even know it was brain fog. Pulling his hammy against you guys when Jota scored. That was funny.
Oh, God, yeah.
I
like but that also, in that same moment, as much as that was funny, like, he got in the referee's face, didn't
he? Yeah.
He did go over the top.
The referee from earlier, yeah, right in his face. This is why... As for me, it's funny, as a Liverpool fan, this is the kind of reason why opposition fans don't like him.
Yeah.
But opposition fans now will be buzzing that he's going, because it's like...
I think, and that's a good closing point. I think that some of the piss taking, and I've done it, you know, the 12:30s, it's windy, the corner flags blown and all that. It's only part out of envy, right? Because he's so bloody good. And that always, one of the regular questions I had when we was going through these boring sets of managers was, if you could take anyone... And then he always said Klopp, because you just knew it would be fun again if you had someone like that in charge of your team. And I think what I definitely know, you see that with that video with the young Irish lad I mentioned and stuff, in terms of him the human, yeah, you can definitely relate to that. And anything that's pissed people off is because he's bought into the tribalism of being Liverpool manager and the kind of us against world mentality that I think you need at times.
He loves it. He loves that part.
The manager club part.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Absolutely super manager. I think one of the all-time best in the Premier League. And I said this on a Patreon pod that we did. I don't think it should count against him when we talk about great Premier League managers that he won one Premier League title because of what he's gone up against. Throw your team in the 90s or the noughties, it would have won a lot more without question. I must touch on FPL before we let you go. At time of recording, which is 9 p.m. on Monday evening, no Liverpool Luton announcement yet for double game week 25, but we think it's probably coming.
Mm-hmm.
Briefly, Dan, what's your intention with Liverpool assets at the moment?
Well, I've still got Trent. I held him through his injury, so he's obviously back now. Whether he gets his place back, I think Connor Bradley will be a bit reluctant to let it go the way he's been playing.
He's been good, hasn't he?
He's been very good, surprisingly good. I mean, Salah comes in if he's, you know, however his rehab goes, how long it is, I don't know. We don't know yet. Obviously, we know Egypt are out, so regardless, he's not going back there. I think I said the last podcast, I said Jota's probably the best shout, and I don't change that opinion. I think he probably is still the best shout. And maybe Nunez as well, if Salah's not back.
Yeah, it does feel... I mean, what's your intention? Is it to leave money for Salah, or is it just, if I've got to get there, I'll take a minus four and deal with it?
I'll need to take hits. I think if I want to get, which in my head I do, I want to get De Bruyne, Haaland, Salah.
Blimey, with Trent, it's not manageable.
Yeah, with Trent already, I can do it. I've worked it out. I can do it, but it, you know, I would have to take a couple of hits to do it, or not necessarily. I could do it over kind of maybe I'd probably get away with a minus four, ready for then.
Would you consider just trying to work on the basis here, just hypothetically, that Mo's not back for the minute for 25. Do you definitely, if this double happens, do you definitely captain, say, a Haaland in the double then with City?
Or
would you be tempted to go, I can take him on with Jota or Trent or Nunez or something like that?
I think if Haaland's back and he's got a couple of 90 minutes under his belt by then, I think it's a no-brainer. But it all depends on where you sit in an FPL. You know, I'm very much a mini league player, and not so much so the overall kind of rank and climb up the ranks. Obviously, they lend themselves to each other. But if I'm chasing, then yeah, I'd probably have a punt on, you know, maybe a De Bruyne, maybe a Foden or a Jota or a Nunez. If I want to, you know, consolidate, I'm kind of up at the top, then I play safe and go Haaland. That's the way I play the game.
What about double defensive? Adding something to Trent, i.e. Van Dijk or even Robertson now that he's back potentially, or Alisson?
Yeah, it's possible. I'm not convinced. I think Luton are a difficult, aren't they? Set pieces, they always put you under. They'll get the free kicks in and around.
As will Brentford in your other game as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to allude to them as well, because we've always struggled against Brentford to keep clean sheets. So, if I was going to double defence, if you knew we were playing, I'd probably go City. City look tight. Look like they're not going to concede many.
Yeah, I've got Trent. Would like to get Jota, I think, in 24 is kind of my plan. And I might have to sit on it with just the two. I think maybe. I think it's either, yeah, sure, I might be able to obliterate the team like you might be able to get Salah back if that's the case. But I think as I probably wouldn't captain him, I'd need huge clarity to do that, considering you then blank in 26 as well. And I can't really see me working in Nunez or Van Dijk when you don't play in 26 afterwards. Feels like it's possibly going to be a bit too much.
But some people will do that and just take it.
Oh, definitely.
It's
also relative to probably how many Chelsea, Tottenham, Luton players you've got along with that in terms of manipulating 26. If you haven't got any Tottenham, then it becomes way easier, for example, to go, treble Liverpool.
Yeah, I've only got Poro, I think. But I was partly planning on losing Poro anyway to pull back a bit of funds to do what I wanted to do, to get the four of them in. I think with Maddison back on the scene, you'll know more than me being the Tottenham man, but I just think he'll probably be off set pieces as much as he is and stuff. And
Maddison will definitely pick some of them up. Yeah. Ask me after Wednesday night. I might be able to give you a better answer on that.
Yeah. I think with regards to Salah, I think if he plays any part of 24.
Yeah. Then you want
against Burnley, then you bring him in. I think, you know, you're getting at least 90 and a 30 or 60, aren't you, of the other one, I think. And on paper, the two fixtures, particularly Luton at home, you know, we may concede, but I'd fancy us to get a few goals. Brentford would be a bit trickier, but they're up and down, aren't they, at the moment? So if he's fit, he's got to come in, hasn't he, I think? And then have you captain him?
Sort of hoping he's not, because it just makes the decision.
It will make it easier.
It makes the decision easy, isn't it? I just ignore him.
But if he is, then that's decision to make for a lot of managers, isn't it? And it makes it a bit more...
Yeah, no, it'd be better for the game if he's back. Yeah, no doubt about it. Definitely be better for the game if he's back. Thank you very much, Dan. I enjoyed that very much, mate. I wish you the very best of luck for the rest of the season, particularly in game week 23. How many trophies are you going to win this season, Dan? Jürgen?
Four. We're going for all of it. Not messing about this year.
Realistically? Let's just talk about the league briefly. Cup competitions are cup competitions. The league.
I'd stick by my guns. I think we'll still struggle to top City. But it, like I say, if we come away with at least 4 points, but preferably six in the next two, and then you know we obviously get the results we're expected to get in the other games of the lower clubs, then I'd fancy us. I think if we're kind of still where we are come mid-March, I fancy us to kind of do it, really.
Oh, what's happening mid-March? Roundabouts the 10th, I believe. That's Man City rocking up at Anfield. I wouldn't be surprised if that's potentially definitive. I feel like this will be the first time you have played City in a run-in late on. And I think that's fairly late on, sort of last 10-ish games, where you'll be at home. I feel like it's happened and it's probably been at the Etihad a few times. That's how it feels. You normally played them earlier in the season, it's normally felt like.
Yeah, I don't know to categorically say that's right. But yeah, it feels the same to me. We always get City at home, like 18, 19, 20, something like that. I don't know. We'll see, isn't it? There's a long way to go and things could change. I think it all depends on how we keep emotions in check now. From now until
and injuries, isn't it? It's the understated, but you know, if something happens to Alisson and Van Dijk, for example, it's a major problem, isn't it?
I'm more confident now with seeing Kwanzaa come in and you know with Bradley coming in and you know Gomez playing left back or he could play centre back. That depth doesn't worry me the same. I've seen it as how good they can be and. There'll be a massive miss if we get injuries like that. But we've got decent depth now. You know, in midfield, we've got loads. You know, McAllister, Jones, Thiago's back anytime soon by the looks of it. You know, we've got that to add into the mix. And, you know, he's not going to be playing games, but he's a game changer. You know, if it's 0-0 after 60 minutes, we'll throw Thiago on and get a bit of magic or whatever. So I'm quietly confident and I'm not usually like this, as you know.
No, I'm
usually pessimistic. I think it's probably just riding on the back of the kind of Klopp news, really, and it's probably put me in a false sense of security or something.
I no doubt you can feel the kind of the romantic narrative to how this ends. And winning football matches helps, right? You're in a very good run of form, certainly helps as well. Dan, brilliant chat. Thank you so much, mate. Other than going to look at fog fucks, what is it? Brain fugs? Brain fucks.
Brain fog it is. Yeah, brain fucks. Listen to the my favourite one is the Brummy commentator where he asks him about the Villa game.
Oh, he just doesn't understand.
He doesn't understand anyone. Yeah. Sorry, what? Like, you know, what did you just say to me? You can see his face, like the confusion building.
Maybe you can, if there's like a highlight reel of Klopp's funniest moments or something,
there's loads yeah, going around.
Knock us out a link or something and we'll share it as well, mate.
I'll send you some.
Good stuff. Thank you so much, mate. Dan, you can follow at FPL_LocoLord on Twitter. Suj, be back with me for the Sky Fantasy Football podcast tomorrow. And for those of you on YouTube, if you want to join me for the deadline stream, that's at 5 PM UK time today. Just sees me. So thanks very much, Dan. Good luck for the rest of the season, pal. Cue music, please. Man sharp.
Fantasy Football Show. Sports Social Podcast Network.